Today's podcast is presented by Podgo. Podgo is the easiest way for you to monetize your podcast, providing podcasters with a flat rate for ad space so you always know how much you get when you include an ad from Podgo. I recently joined as a member, and you can too. Apply today to become a member and immediately be connected with advertisers that fit your audience. That's podgo.co at podgo.co.
You don't have to struggle in silence. You can be unsilent. You can live well with a mental health condition as long as you open up to somebody about it. Demi Lovato.
Hey everyone, what's up? And welcome back to another episode on the Hipster Mom Podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Betters. And if you're a first-time listener to the show, I would like to say welcome and to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy day to listen. It's my sincere hope that you find something useful, enlightening, entertaining, and who knows, maybe you'll find all of the above while listening to this podcast. This podcast covers many topics that revolve around parenting, mom life, mental health, self-love, health and wellness, as well as encouraging you to follow your own path, because not everything is a one-size-fits-all. But without further ado, let's jump right into today's episode.
So for today's episode, I would like to talk about World Mental Health Day. And in fact, I'm releasing this episode a little bit early because October 10th, that is actually going to be the actual holiday for World Mental Health Day. But I figured this way I could get like a head start on it, just so that way it kind of gives you guys more of an idea of what World Mental Health Day is all about. And people might be wondering, what is World Mental Health Day? Well, World Mental Health Day is actually a way to combat the stigma that really surrounds mental health, as well as mobilizing the efforts that actually help people gain access to better mental health care. Because I truly believe that once our mind is affected, everything else is affected after that. Because if your brain or anything, a part of your mind is affected by stress, anxiety, and depression, your quality of life can really start to suffer. And especially in the light of the pandemic, I really believe that a lot of people's mental health is really suffering, especially because I feel like people more so than ever before are suffering in silence. But I feel that some people are a little scared or even a little unsure of whether to come forward or not by saying, I need help. And I think that also ties into the idea of the stigma as well. And I really feel that we all need to do our part in order to combat this. And for today's episode, I actually had the privilege of sitting down with Nancy Diaz, who is a teletherapist. She has her master's degree in social work. And during her time in college, she started to feel the symptoms of burnout. And she was very open and honest about that part, because I feel that, you know, even therapists can begin to feel burnout. And especially after hearing the course load that she had to take, as well as working a full-time job and also working an internship as well, that's a lot. And that can take a very big toll on your mental health. And when she finally saw that she was actually starting to feel the burnout symptoms, she got really honest with herself and decided to take a mental health break. And as a result of that, she became a digital nomad, and she is currently traveling around the world right now. And I really do believe that our conversation is very vital for a lot of people, but I won't give too much more away. But anyway, I want to turn our conversation to Nancy, and I hope that you guys will take away something from our conversation.
Well, thank you for joining me here. I appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
So we'll just get started here. Maybe if you'd like to tell us a little bit about yourself, and just so that way the listeners can get a better understanding of who you are.
Yeah, sure. So I'm an online psychotherapist and digital nomad. I am originally from the US, and I'm living in Sydney, Australia at the moment. And yeah, I decided to start my own private practice because I wanted to combine my passion for traveling and for helping people. I got my master's degree in social work 2 years ago and went on a bit of a self-care break. And yeah, now I'm ready to jump back in and help people feel better.
Yeah, that's really nice. And it's really nice when you got somebody to talk to, especially for being a digital nomad, because I imagine that life can be pretty lonely sometimes.
Yeah, I think, there is that loneliness, because I think that once you move around so much and you're meeting different people, and it can be hard to start over again and again. At the same time, it's interesting because you're never alone unless you want to be, because there's always opportunities to meet people when you're traveling. And so, yeah, really, like I spent like 2 days this past week just working inside, and I didn't really talk to a single soul. But really, that was my choice, because people were inviting me to different places. The weather was lovely. I said, oh, let's go to the beach. Let's do this. Let's do that. But I had just gotten back from a trip. And so I said, oh, I need to take some time to just relax and get some things done and just be at home. But mm-hmm. Yeah, you're really only ever alone if you want to be. But at the same time, yeah, sometimes the relationships that you build, if you're moving around too much, they can be, you know, a bit more on the surface.
Right. And, you know, sometimes that's just needed too, to just recharge your batteries and just kind of being okay with being in your own company in a way. At least that's what it seems to make sense to me anyway.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be able to be okay with being on your own.
Right. And then, so you said you're a psychotherapist. Like, how long did you have to go to school for that?
6 years. I did my master's degree right after my bachelor's degree. So yeah, at least in the States, that's pretty much what it is. You have to have a master's degree, and you have to have a license, take an exam, all of that good stuff. In different countries, they have very different requirements. In Australia, for example, it's very different here as far as the requirements to be a psychotherapist, to be a psychologist. So yeah, it's been interesting learning about what the differences are in different countries.
Mm-hmm. Like the different requirements, different qualifications too, I'm sure. But
yeah.
And then did your childhood have a play into making a decision for the career choice that you wanted to go into, or how did that play out?
Yeah, it did. Since a very young age, my mom took us to volunteer with her at the church. Whether it was feeding the homeless or helping them put on fundraising events or different things. So yeah, I loved helping people from a really young age. And so when it was time to pick a major in college, I thought, okay, I know that I want to help people. If I could volunteer and help people for a living, that's what I would want to do. And so that's why I got my degree in nonprofit management. That's what my undergrad was in. And then, yeah, later on, I decided that I wanted to get my master's in social work so that I could, help people have more skills to help more people. So, yeah, it did have an impact, just all those times that we went volunteering. I mean, it goes super often, but mm-hmm. Yeah, every time that we did, I love the feeling of, you know, just seeing that you were actually making a difference. And that's what I wanted to do. I always wanted to have a career where I could feel good at the end of the day and say, wow, I made a difference today.
Right. And just like planting that little seed, you know, making a difference in someone's life, even if it didn't seem obvious to you, maybe like under the surface, it meant a lot to them too.
Yeah, exactly. I think that it definitely helped a lot of people. And yeah, that's why I always encourage people to go volunteer, because even if you're down in the dumps, if you can put a smile on someone else's face, it'll light you up inside as well.
Right. It's like, I think we all need that, especially as of right now with the pandemic and everything like that.
Yeah, definitely. And I think sometimes we get so caught up in work that we kind of forget, and we get so caught up in our own problems that we forget how good we have it. So
Right. Just
being able to give back and really see like, oh, there are people that are struggling, you know, even more than I am. So it puts things into perspective for sure.
Yeah. In a way, like we kind of get wrapped up in our own worlds, and it kind of desensitizes us from other real issues that are going on in today's world and today's society, it seems like.
Yeah, exactly.
So has there ever been a personal experience that ever like where you struggled with your own mental health? And of course, just answer that only if you feel comfortable sharing any kind of stories or anything like that.
Yeah, sure. There was a time right when I graduated that I felt like I was on the road to burnout. And that's kind of what led me down the path of, I'm going to quit my job and move to Australia, because I could tell that if I stayed in that job, I was definitely going to burn out. I was working as a therapist for unaccompanied migrant children in a detention center. And so just hearing the horrific trauma that they had been through just day after day, listening to those stories, I could tell that it was starting to take a toll on my own mental health. And I could tell that I was on the road pretty quick to burnout because I had just started that job. And so in the initial training period, they were kind of keeping me with low caseloads, I guess. But I knew that once that initial period was over, that then they'd give me a lot more cases. And so I said, I don't think I can do this. I think that I need a real self-care break if I am going to ever come back to this field and come back to helping people, because I need to take care of myself first before I can take care of others. So that's what I decided to do. I quit and I moved to Australia. I took a real self-care break for about a year and a half. I didn't give myself a timeline or anything. And yeah, when I felt ready, that's when I decided, okay, let's do this. It was when the pandemic started that I said, okay, now I'm feeling the calling that there are people out there that could benefit from the skills that I have and the training and everything that I've had. So yeah, I think I'm ready to get back out there and start helping people. But yeah, right. I recommend anyone that's going through a burnout like that to really take the time, not rush it, and to come back whenever they feel ready, not when someone else tells them that they should be ready.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. And I think I need to start heeding that advice too. Like, you're giving me advice without even realizing it.
Yeah. I think it's something that a lot of people need to hear. And that's actually one of the first things that I wanted to talk about. I just launched my own podcast on mental health for digital nomads. And that's one thing that I see, you know, that almost every digital nomad seems to have experienced or is on the road to experiencing it, because we all just get so caught up in working, and it's terrible. We start working really long hours and just forgetting to take care of ourselves. And yeah,
right.
Really bad.
Right. There's no sugarcoating that. There really isn't. It's like, you're on the road to burnout. Like, you've got to take care of yourself. And, you know, it's nice to see that even therapists are kind of heeding their own advice too, like, to start taking care of themselves, because that can be pretty taxing. I can imagine on your mental state, like, having to hear all those stories. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, any career can have long hours, and you know, you could have difficult relationships with coworkers, with your boss, but yeah, when actually the clients that you're seeing, they're also making it harder for you, that's when you need to take a step back and really think about, okay, am I taking care of myself? What am I actually doing for self-care? Because yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, I take really good care of my mental health now, because I've realized that if I'm going to be in this field and I'm going to be helping people, that I can't burn out again. I need to make sure that my glass is full. So that's why now I take good care of my mental health. But to be honest, during those 6 years that I was studying, I don't think I even really knew what self-care was. I had no idea what was good for me, what I enjoyed, what I liked doing. I did try to make sure that I got good sleep. So actually, I think I'm one of the few people who actually made it through 6 years of college without ever pulling an all-nighter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And actually, I had great grades, but I didn't put that pressure on myself to have, you know, like a 4.0 GPA, because I knew that at the end of the day, I mean, I've been out of school for 2 years now. Nobody has ever asked me what my GPA was. You know, so
it really,
in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter as long as you feel like you're learning the skills, you know, and if you miss submitting a paper, in the grand scheme of things, it's not going to matter. Because I always thought, like, you know what, I'm going to save all of these papers, all these articles, all these books, all these resources that you get when you're studying. And if I ever want to go back to it, once I graduate, once I have more time, I could always do that. Because for me, it's about actually learning the skills instead of just, you know, pulling an all-nighter just to write that perfect paper and submit it just to get that A. For me, I was like, nah, if I get a B, that's fine. So it's funny, because one of the classes that I took, that was one of the first, it was the toughest class really that I took during my master's program. And the first thing that the instructor asked, he had us go around the room, introduce ourselves, and say what grade we expected in the class. And every single person in the class said, I want an A or I want an A plus or, you know. Mm-hmm. And I was the only one that said, like, you know, I'd be happy with the C. And it's not that I, yeah. And people looked at me like, what? And yeah. I just said, look, I'm working full time. I have a full time class load. I have to do an internship. You know, like I realistically, like I would be happy with the C. I feel like, you know, if I can pass the class and I feel like I can learn the skills, like I said, for me, it was like, okay, as long as I have the resources, I can always go back to this later. And in my free time, if I want to write that perfect paper, once I have way more free time, then I can do that. But right. Yeah, for me, it was not about. So yeah, I think that was the only way that I managed to not burn out when I was doing so much during school. Because right. I could definitely tell that some of my classmates, they were burning out. And yeah. A lot of them had to leave. And so, yeah, because it's tough. I mean, the internships that we were doing, they were, you know, working with clients that seeing trauma every day. Mm-hmm. Not to mention our full-time jobs that we needed to pay our tuitions. They were also really stressful.
Right.
And just the classes were hard. So, yeah, I said, no, I'm not going to put that kind of pressure on myself. So that's the only way that I made it. But mm-hmm. Yeah, at the same time, that was about the only thing that I could tell you that I did for self-care is that I didn't put that pressure on myself. I made sure that I got enough sleep every night, but that's about it. Other than that, I wasn't exercising. I wasn't really going into nature. I didn't even know that I like nature. Like now I know for sure I could tell you nature is my self-care.
Right.
If I am feeling stressed or whatever, I will go for a nature walk. I have to get out of the house, get more oxygen, hit my brain, and all of a sudden then I can relax.
Right.
But yeah, back then I didn't know that. I had no idea really what it is that I enjoyed, what it is that I could do to de-stress. There was just no time to figure that out. So right. Yeah, I mean, I feel like I barely made it through those 6 years, barely made it through. And right. Then as soon as I was done and I started that really stressful job, I said, nope, mm-hmm. I don't think my body can handle it anymore.
Right.
So yeah,
right.
I made the best decision for myself. Mm-hmm. And I quit and I took that break and now I'm ready.
Right. And that's really nice that you're upfront and just honest with yourself too. And it's nice to see that therapists are kind of calling themselves out saying like, you know, you help other people and you're doing great things, but what are you doing for you? You're not doing anything for yourself because in a way it's kind of selfish because you're taking away from you. You mean you're pouring into so many things that you're not pouring all of that energy back into yourself, like that the positive mental health that you really need. And I mean, yeah. I can just imagine how stressful that was. That's actually making my anxiety go through the roof right now as we speak.
Yeah, it was a tough time for sure. And I'm just, yeah, I'm glad that I made it through. And now I have the skills to be able to help people, which is what I wanted. You know, I didn't care so much about the grades and everything else. I just said, I just want to make it through mm-hmm. and have the skills to be able to help people. But I think everyone else got so caught up in everything else and getting right. the perfect grades and getting the best internships. And, you know, and I just said, you know what, I feel like at the end of the day, we're all going to end up in the same spot. We're all going to have the same degree. You know, we're all going to have internship experience because it was required, you know, so we're all right. going to have some kind of internship experience. So really, mm-hmm. it doesn't really matter at the end of the day. In the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter too much. So I just want to be able to make it through, make it all the way through, say I was able to do this. I didn't have to stop and take any breaks in between because, yeah,
right.
I saw a lot of people that said, I'm going to take a break this semester. And then they never came back because it was just too much. So
right.
that's what I didn't want to happen to me. So
yeah,
I am proud of myself for sticking through it. But definitely, if I could go back and do it again, mm-hmm. I would tell myself, hey, listen to your instructors who are preaching about self-care almost every single day.
Right.
Because, you know, we were studying social work and they knew that our internships were tough and that they mm-hmm. knew that we had a million things on our plate and they knew that we needed to take care of ourselves so that we wouldn't burn out. So they would right. talk about self-care all the time, but it would just go in one ear and out the other with all mm-hmm. of us. You know, I could see that all of us were just like, yeah, yeah, whatever. There'll be time mm-hmm. for self-care once we're done with this, you know?
Right. Right.
And Yeah, so that's right. The advice that I'd give to anyone who's in school right now is to actually really take care of yourself. That way you can actually make it all the way through and not burn out as soon as you graduate like I did.
Right. And definitely same for here too, because there were so many times where I was pulling all-nighters, because that's just sometimes like just... Because of course, depending on like my circumstance, I was a mom, like I'm still a mom. I'm taking care of a 6-year-old at the time, taking 12 credits at the same time too. So that was a full-time course load and taking care of a kid on top of that. Yeah, I burnt out really quickly in my last fall semester of 2019. That was, I don't even know how I made it through. I got all B's, so that's all I cared about.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, congratulations. Yeah. I would see the mothers in my class and I'd be like, wow, I'm stressed. I can't imagine how stressed you must be. And I was clapping probably the hardest at graduation when they had the mother stand up, because I was like, that is so impressive. I have no idea how you did that, because I definitely would have had to pull all-nighters if I had a kid, because that's just that would be too much for sure.
Yeah.
So kudos to you for doing that. But
yeah thank you.
It is really hard, and you have to actually take care of yourself and try as hard as you can to make sure that you are getting enough sleep, because that has such a huge impact on your mental health.
Yes.
And I think that in not to put this blame on you or anything, but I think so many people do this in our society, that you wear, you know, those sleepless nights like a badge of honor.
Right.
And you just, and I've heard so many people, you know, I have a friend just the other day who, you know, we were going to get up, we were doing a trip, right? And we were going to get up at 4 a.m. for a hot air balloon sunrise.
Yep.
And so we were not going to get that much sleep, because we had a full day of activities.
Right.
And, you know, but I said like, well, let's go to sleep a bit early so we can still make sure that we get enough rest and we have enough energy to do everything that we want to do. And she just said, oh, I'm used to it. Like, you know, she's a medical doctor. She's like, I'm used to it. Sometimes we just get like 2 hours of sleep or 4 hours of sleep and it's fine. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the way that she was bragging about it, I said, but that's not good, you know, especially if you're in a helping profession, you shouldn't, you know. And she was telling us about, that's just how the system is set up when you're a surgeon. Sometimes you have, you know, really long 12, 14 hour shifts. And so I said, but that's so hard, because I mean, it is what it is. That's kind of how the job is. Sometimes you are in those long surgeries, so there's kind of no way around that.
Right.
But I said, but, you know, when you do have the opportunity to sleep, you definitely should take it. You shouldn't, you know, say, oh, I'm going to sleep only 2 hours because I'm used to it, or because I can, or because I want to seem like, you know, like I'm so tough and I don't need that much sleep. Really, we should try to switch that mentality and say, no, I'm really tough because I get enough sleep and I wake up and I can actually hit everything hard because I have enough energy.
Right.
Versus the people who are like, I only got 2 hours of sleep and look at me, I made it through the day. I'm like, but how productive can you really be if you only get 2 hours of sleep?
Right.
You know, and you just can't keep going like that. It's not sustainable.
No, not at all. And there, I can attest to that too, just because of the fact that I could feel it. Like, I was so tired. Like, I mean, I was there, but mentally I'm not there at all. Like, I'm just completely zoned out because, I mean, I'm so tired. I was so sleep deprived. It's like, you can't do that to yourself. You really can't.
Yeah. That's why, if at all possible, you have to get enough sleep, because it affects everything. If you get enough sleep, then you'll just be way more productive. You'll feel better. Not getting enough sleep, you know, studies show that it could lead to more anxiety, more depression. So everything's just connected. So that's why you really have to watch, you know, how many sleepless nights you're having. Start tracking it if you're seeing too many.
Right.
And really start trying to put other pieces together to see how you can avoid that.
Yeah. And I remember reading something too. I think that people who do like the night shift work from like 10 to 6, they are actually more prone to have heart issues. And I'm like, no, thank you. I don't want that.
That's why, I dated a guy who was doing night shift for 3 years, and I was just so worried about his health the entire time, because then on his days off, he'd try to switch his, his schedule back to day shifts to spend time with me. And I just, I kind of felt guilty like the whole time. I was like, yeah, of course I want to see you, spend time with you and talk to you. But at the same time, like it's just really tough because I know that this is like really having a huge impact on your mental health, on your physical health. And and I knew about those studies as well. And I knew that it could lead to so many other issues down the line if you kept doing it that way. And I just, I do feel really bad for the people who are stuck in night shift jobs and can't switch out of them because it starts to take a toll for sure.
Right. And hopefully sooner or later, they finally, it's got to come from them to make that decision if they want to change it. I mean, you can point the research, to them and say, this is what could potentially happen to you if you keep this up, but it's got to come from them.
Yeah, exactly.
So when it came to your profession, what are the three people that have actually been influential to you? I mean, it could be during school, after school, or during your career, just anybody. Who has been the most influential to you?
The three most influential people, the first two are my parents, of course, because they are immigrants from Mexico, and they just instilled in me like the values of hard work and just really giving back, and they just really taught me so much about how to be a good person, and just have taught me so many life skills along the way that I'm just so grateful to them. And because especially I don't see this too often, that as far as in the Mexican culture, that they really instill that, you need an education, unfortunately, because a lot of the people that I went to high school with did have a Mexican background, and I could see that their parents were just like, oh, don't worry about it, especially if you're female, you'll get married, your husband will take care of you, you'll be fine. Or they'll just say, oh, you know what, as long as you graduate from high school, they throw a huge party if someone graduated from high school. Right. So, I could see that my parents were different in that sense, that they really instilled the value of education in me. And they said, no, you're meant for better things. You're going to go to college and you're going to get a good career and you're going to do what you want. And you're going to have so many more options and so many more doors open once you go to college. And so they never set the bar that low for me. And I'm so, so grateful to them, because I could see, for example, in my graduating high school class, I think I'm one of maybe two that actually has a master's degree.
Oh, wow.
So that just kind of tells you I graduated to something like 400 people. So the fact that most people don't have a bachelor's degree that I went to high school with, I'm one of two that has a master's degree, as far as I know. So it's hard. And so that's why I'm really grateful to them that they kept pushing me and that they supported me all through college and just kept me going. So I'm very grateful to them. They were very inspiring in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
And the third person, and this is actually, I'm not gonna say the name of one person because it's just actually having an instructor or a teacher who actually is of a minority background. That to me was so inspirational, just having someone that I could look up to that looked like me or had been through the same struggles, who kind of knew what I was going through, and to see like, wow, like this can be me, like, because I think all through elementary school, all my teachers were white.
Right.
Most through college, they were mostly white. So I can count on one hand the number of instructors that I had that were a minority background.
Right.
And I remember I was just so excited every day to go to their class. I was like, wow, like they've made it so far and now here they are and they're teaching. And it was just, it's so inspirational.
Right.
But yeah. So when it was my last or second to last semester in my master's degree, when I finally had an instructor who was of a Mexican background, and I was so excited, and just the things that he talked about in class, and it was just so inspirational, really, to hear his story. He'd gotten his PhD, he came back to teach, to give back, and just the things that he was talking about in his class, because everyone in the class except for me and maybe one or two other people, they were white. So he was actually trying to explain to them And he tried so many times, and I don't know if he actually got through to people, but he said, look at me. He said, I am one of very few who is actually of minority background and who has made it this far. He said, it's because the American dream is it's a lie. He said, you can work hard and get here. But he said, but I'm the exception.
Right.
He said, if it was really that easy, there'd be way more people that look like me here teaching, you know, and doing the things that he's doing. And so he tried to teach people, like, you know what, like you have to realize your privilege, and you have to realize, you know, and be grateful for the opportunities that you have, because not everyone has the same opportunities.
Right.
So, yeah, for me, that was really inspirational. Having instructors like that really made me push a little bit harder. So like I said, at the end, I was feeling like, oh my God, I'm going to burn out. And so it could have even been the fact that I had that instructor that made me push a little bit harder, because I was like, I was so tired. I was so tired towards the end. I was like, I know I'm almost there, but I really need a break.
Yeah.
But then, just seeing him, being able to talk to him and hear his own journey, his own experience, I was like, wow, this is exactly like who I want to be like. I want to be able to one day go back and teach a class and just be there. Just the fact that my face is going to like inspire, you know, other people who are like, what's even the point? Nobody else looks like me. Like, I don't really know what I'm going through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It is kind of a lonely experience when everyone else around you looks very different. So for me, that was definitely important.
Right. And definitely influential. It sounds like your parents and then another, your instructor, because I can actually count on only like one hand, literally two professors of minority. There was one of them, I believe, was Middle Eastern. I want to say he's probably either Indian or like Pakistan, something along those lines. I'm not really sure. I don't ask because I feel like that's none of my business. And the other one was from a Hispanic background too. I want to say he might have been, I want to say he did come from Mexico. I forget how you pronounce his name, like Pasas or something like that. But yeah, he was a sociology professor. And I just thought like, the way, because he was teaching us about ethnicity, race, and, you know, just all the different issues, and how is race really biological? You know, he had all these arguments and stuff like that. And I just thought, huh, I never really thought about that before. Because it's kind of unteaching us all the things that we thought we knew about race. And I was like, so do you really know about race? No, you really don't. And he tried
why I love sociology classes. They make you question everything. And I was considering majoring in sociology back in the day after I had my first semester of sociology in my undergrad. And I just thought, wow, I love this. And I had a really great instructor as well who just like blew my mind with everything that she's talking about. I was like, whoa.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. You're so right. Like, we don't know anything about anything. Like,
So
funny.
Then I had one lady who taught in sociology. It was a sex and gender in contemporary society. That's the that was the title of the class. And we were talking about how way back in the 1300s or so, men actually wore high heels and stuff like that, like higher heeled shoes. And I'm like, what? And then when you think of cowboy boots, is there any difference? Not really. There's no difference.
Yeah.
So
that's so funny. Yeah, I also took a sociology of gender class, so that's pretty funny. And I took a religion and sexuality class, which was so fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I pretty much took every sociology and every psychology class that my college offered. I kid you not. I went through the list and I was like, okay, now I think I've taken all of them.
Right.
This is just so fascinating to me, learning about all these things and really thinking like, wow, like everything is so connected and there's a reason that people act a certain way and the way that our brains work. And I love it.
Right. It's like the misconceptions that we either grew up with or just our own misconceptions, like just things that we think we perceive it to be a certain way. And then we find out that's not it. There's so much more to it. It's so much more in depth than what we all realize. So I always thought sociology was fun.
Yeah, I think everyone should take a sociology or a psychology class, at least one in their lifetimes. I think that should be a requirement, but maybe that's just because I'm a geek about it.
I'm definitely the same way. So trust me, I always want to like bang people over the head with a sociology book. And I'm like, just read this just one time.
Yeah. Yeah, just, exactly.
Just view it from a different viewpoint, you know, open mind. Like, what's going to hurt? Yeah. Well, it's not going to hurt you.
Exactly.
So some of the best resources that you found just kind of keep you inspired with mental health and just your profession, like this could be like podcasts, books. What has helped you along the way?
Well, one podcast that I really love is Savvy Psychologist. It's a podcast on mental health. And that's one that I just love the way that she's able to just kind of bring real topics to life and just discuss a lot of important issues just from a kind of like a real perspective. Like I feel like I know her. So yeah, I love podcasts like that really talk about important issues, but just make it seem so relatable. Right. And so that's one of the things that kind of inspired me to start my own podcast on mental health, is because I loved the topics that she was talking about, but I really wanted to talk about mental health from the perspective of a digital nomad, of a traveler, because we have such unique issues, right, and we have such different life experiences on a day-to-day basis. And so yeah, I really wanted to be able to interview digital nomads about their own mental health journeys and learn from them, interview different experts on different topics that relate to digital nomad mental health. So mm-hmm. Yeah, it's been great so far. I've done a few interviews already. I just launched last week, so I'm excited to have that out. But yeah, at the same time, I'm like, wow, this is a lot. It's exciting, right, but it's stressful, of course. Right. So,
right.
Yeah. But yeah, one of the main reasons I decided to start it is because I was actually just looking for resources that could help my clients who are digital nomads. And I really couldn't find anything. I asked in a few groups, like, hey, are there any podcasts on mental health for travelers or digital nomads? Like, I was just looking for anything that kind of talked about the very different issues that digital nomads experience. And there was nothing out there. And then people were encouraging me to start a podcast. And I was like, me? I know nothing about podcasting. That's not my world. Right. And, but yeah, just all the encouragement, I was like, okay, this is needed. So let's do it.
Right.
And yeah, I've had a blast so far, like interviewing different people and getting to talk to people that maybe I wouldn't have connected with before. So yeah, it's been great.
Right. And then I actually did some digging into that too. And for the life of me, it didn't matter like what keywords to put in the search bar of Google. I couldn't find anything on digital nomads for mental health resources either. And I thought, yeah, that there's lack in that, like maybe a new area to explore.
Definitely. Well, that's kind of why when I started my private practice, there were so many different ways I could have gone. I was thinking like, what clients do I want to serve? And for me, I think from the perspective of a social worker, I'm always looking for the gap in services. So I wanted to make sure that if I was going to do this, I was going to serve clients who were maybe underrepresented or didn't have enough resources available. So yeah, for me, I said, okay, well, yeah, same thing when I searched mental health for digital nomads. There wasn't too much out there. And there are some therapists, and I've connected with a few of them, who are digital nomads as well. But usually their niche is very like specific, like, oh, they work with anxiety, or maybe they work with bipolar, but they don't necessarily work with travelers or digital nomads or entrepreneurs, you know.
Right.
I can count on one hand the ones that I've come across that specifically work with digital nomads. So that's why I said, okay, I think there need to be more of us out there who are actually, you know, doing this kind of work, because there's not a lot of resources, not a lot of research. So yeah.
Right. And I mean, that's crazy. You would think that out there, there'd be a little bit more people talking about it, like, especially from like therapists being digital nomads, even you'd think that they would want to help more than just one area of mental health, but I don't know. That's quite interesting.
Well, I think, and the reason that I'm thinking that they don't go down this path, which I guess I didn't really think through all the way, is because as therapists, we struggle with marketing, because it's not a class that we ever take in our program. Yeah. And so we really know nothing about how to sell our practice, how to market ourselves, how to sell our services, that kind of thing. So that's a struggle in itself. So I listen to a lot of podcasts for therapists and that kind of thing. So I know that this is something that everyone's struggling with. But most therapists, at least like in the US, because you have a license in one state, you can only see clients in that state. So it's interesting. So it, I mean, they're struggling and they only have to advertise in one state. But for example, for me, since I am working with digital nomads who are moving around all over the world, I pretty much have to market to the whole world. So that's probably one of the reasons that they don't go into that, which I guess I didn't really think that through all the way. But I mean, I love it. I love working with digital nomads. So yeah, maybe there's a bit more of a challenge. How do I find my clients where they could be, you know, they could be in any country, and they might be in one country this month and another country next month. So how do I reach them, let them know that I'm here?
Right.
So that could be one of the reasons that they don't do that.
Yeah.
It has been a bit challenging, but yeah, I mean, I love the work that I'm doing. So
yeah,
I think I've chosen the right path.
Right. And especially for helping, you know, digital nomads who seem to be more underrepresented than anything else. And there might even be like minorities, you know, traveling too as digital nomads. It makes you wonder how many of them are actually out there. At least now I'm starting to wonder too.
Well, one thing that I've been seeing is that especially now with the pandemic, there are a lot more people who realize like that they can do their job from anywhere. And so they're actually researching like digital nomad jobs, remote work jobs, you know, and so there are actually way more people who are now trying to take that leap and who are planning, you know, once this pandemic is over, like, where can I go? How do I do this? How do I set myself up? Or there are some who are, you know, trying to escape the US because of how bad things have gotten there and taking off right now. So I've seen a lot of people post about that. Like, okay, I'm done with this. I need to go now. Where do I go? How do I do this? So I think it's super important that there are people like myself and coaches as well, and just people who are there to support, and because it is kind of a difficult lifestyle. It's not just sitting on a beach with a coconut in your hand. It's difficult because if you think about when you travel, even on a vacation, it can be stressful. You might miss your flight. You might get lost. You might get your passport stolen. There could be a million things that go wrong. It can be really stressful. And you think of being an entrepreneur, how stressful that is, not knowing where your income is going to come from, not knowing if you can land the next client, everything that goes into starting a business, especially if you've never really done anything like that.
Right.
So a digital nomad is usually an entrepreneur who's traveling full time, moving around pretty frequently because most visas are just, you know, 3 months and then you have to move somewhere else. So. Right. Yeah, it is very stressful. It's a very different lifestyle. So that's why I think that there should be more help, more resources for digital nomads. So, and I encourage anyone who's thinking about taking that leap to really talk to a coach, talk to a therapist to make sure that they have done their research and that they have resources in place, like having a therapist, someone that if you hit rock bottom that you can reach out to.
Right.
Because even if you have a therapist back home, it's going to be hard, especially when you're moving around, you're in different time zones. Most therapists just work the regular 9 to 5 during the week. You know, for me, like sometimes I have clients that I see on the weekends, sometimes I do evenings, sometimes. So I'm pretty flexible because I know that, you know, for example, when I leave Australia and I'm all of a sudden in a new time zone, I'm going to have to ask these clients, hey, so can we switch around that time? Because now the time that we're doing is the middle of the night for me, you know? So that's why I also love that my clients totally get that. And they're like, oh yeah, of course. Let's see what else works.
Right.
It's so important to have someone who you can talk to who is going to be flexible because once you leave your comfort zone, there's everything changes.
Right.
Even the friends, the circle of friends that you have back home, some people like once you leave, they really want nothing to do with you. They don't want to put in the effort to have a long distance friendship or anything like that. So there are a lot of things that change and a lot of things that you might not think about when you're considering this kind of lifestyle, but that are so important to consider so that you can actually take care of your mental health, your physical health. There's so many things that go into it.
Right. And then it sounds like there could be a future research project maybe one day for you. possibly like digital nomads and just finding the right resources for them, just things that make sense for them to utilize, because that is a very difficult lifestyle, like having to find, you know, just like you're saying, it's kind of like vacation, except it's not. You got to find a place to live. You got to find like financial security, depending on what job you're doing, food, because where you live, it could be a food desert. You never know. There's so many things that could go wrong. It's kind of like Murphy's Law. Anything that can go wrong may go wrong. So yeah. Be careful. Just yeah, be careful. Exactly. You got to be careful.
I think that's one thing that's not really seen that much in social media when we're talking about digital nomads. You usually just see these models on beaches and with their laptop, which, I've never worked from a beach, and I'm just like, why would you ever take your laptop to a place with sand and water? But you see these things on Instagram, and I'm like, okay, that's not really realistic. That's not really what the lifestyle is like, but okay.
Right.
So, some people just think, you're right. Like, I could work from anywhere, so why not go and work from the beach? And then you get there, and you're like, oh, no, that's not going to work.
I would not take my laptop to a beach for the life of me anyway. I love my laptop. I want to take care of it for as long as it will work for me. I'm not damaging my technology. It's like, you can't pay me enough money in the world to take it to a beach.
I know. I'm like, they probably borrow some non-working laptops for that photo shoot, because I don't think that you really want to take your MacBook to the beach.
Nobody wants to take their iPhone to a beach, not their expensive laptop, because that would be, well, that'd be just ludicrous to even do that in the first place. Like, that just makes me cringe just thinking about it.
So you're right. There's definitely room for research there, because I really, I want to bust those myths. I want to really make sure that people know that, you know, there's expectation and there's reality, and you have to be prepared for reality, because,
Because
that this lifestyle is not for everyone, and some people will experience travel burnout really quickly. I have a friend who was just telling me that she visited something like 32 countries in 2 years, and she's like, that was way too much for me, and I burned out. She experienced travel burnout, where she was at the point where she's like, I was starting to hate traveling. I was starting to not enjoy the places that I was visiting. She's like, I needed to come back, recharge, reset, and then now she's been back for just a few months, and she's already ready to go again. Good for you.
32 countries. That's crazy. Wow. That is a lot. That's a lot to take in, really. I mean, that's... Oh, my. Wow. Like, so we just talked about myths there, or at least you brought it up a little bit. Like, is there like a few myths in your profession that you want to debunk? Because I know it seems like a lot of careers have myths about them that are not true.
Definitely. There's so many that we could go into. I think the one I was thinking about yesterday is just the one surrounding mental health disorders and violence, because just working in this field, I've worked with people who have bipolar or paranoid schizophrenia or just anxiety, depression. You know, like, anxiety and depression are getting a lot more coverage in the media, and I feel like they're more accepted now. And usually people don't associate violence with those, but it's with the other ones that I'm like, wow, we really need to work on this, because, you know, I'm not going to lie, even when I was younger, I would think like, okay, no, yeah, definitely don't want to go near this place, because if someone, for example, near my school, there was a homeless shelter. And so sometimes, I know one person, actually a security guard at the school, told me, oh, you don't want to be walking alone at night around this area, because there are a lot of people with like mental health conditions that could be violent. And so, and I got scared, and I said, okay, yeah, you're right. I shouldn't be, you know, alone at night in this area. But yeah, I think that that's, the reality is that they're more of a risk to themselves than to other people. So, And people with these conditions, they're totally normal. Like you and me, and we have great conversations, and, you know, it's just so sad that they struggle with these, with these misconceptions that people think like that they're going to go into a violent episode, or they're going to experience like this rage and all of a sudden start breaking things, throwing things, or whip out a gun or something. So
right. It's
just not true. So that's one thing that I definitely want to help bust right now, is that I work with these people and they're amazing. They're lovely and they're super kind, super generous. And they're just normal people who just happen to have a little bit of a different brain. So we just have to be compassionate and know that we have to be there to help and support these people and not just back away from them and be scared of them, because that's actually just damaging to them and it's damaging to everyone who's experiencing that.
Right. And that's really sad, because when you think of like the homeless people living on the streets, and a lot of them, or not a lot of them, but most of them anyway, seem to have some type of mental illness, and they don't have any access to anything. Like, they can't treat their problem, and people are, I don't know if they just seem like they're so scared of it, like they don't know how to approach it. But, you know, like you're saying, they're not any different than anybody else. Their brain is just wired a little bit differently. And I don't know. It's just, it's very sad. It makes me sad when I see people on the streets.
Yeah, that's one thing that I was talking about with an Australian guy here yesterday. We were talking about how when I first moved here, I said, wow, there's just so few homeless people here in Sydney. Mm-hmm. And I said, it has to be because of the Medicare here, because at least the clients that I work with that are here in Australia, they have told me, like, yeah, they have their housing covered, food, pretty much every expense. They have access to a lot of different resources, psychiatrists, psychologists, experts in addiction. They have so many opportunities here that I'm like, well, that's why you're not homeless. That's why you're doing so well. That's why I can sit here and have a conversation with you. And if you didn't tell me that you had bipolar, that you had schizophrenia, I wouldn't know it. Because your medications, they're working for you. You're taking them. You're not stressed about having to find a place to live or where your next meal is coming from. So that's why you're doing so well.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, I worked with people in the U.S. as a social worker, and I see the difference right away. And I was like, wow, if we just gave access to healthcare to everyone, then we wouldn't have these issues. We could right away get rid of so many homeless people if they just had access to basic things like medication. Then they could actually, you know, hold down a job, pay their rent, and, you know, it just makes such a huge difference.
Right.
That's a whole other can of worms.
Right. It seems like the psychological part of it gets mixed up with like socioeconomics and a lot of things. It just seems like it just gets intertwined in there somehow. But if only we could actually help them, that would be really nice. Like, it's like, how can you do that? Like, how do we go about this? There's so many different avenues that you can take to help somebody. It's like, it's like, I don't know. It's just very hard. It's very hard. I wouldn't know what to do, but that's why I'm like, God bless you guys for being able to do this, because I know for a fact I would not be able to do it.
We're chipping away one person at a time.
Right. And then what advice do you want to give to somebody who wants to pursue a career that's similar to yours?
Oh my God. What do I even say? I just, anytime that anyone mentions even like maybe I'm sort of kind of thinking about social work or psychology or psychotherapy, I'm like, do it, please. We need more people in this profession. But yeah, like I said, and I think I said this before, but the advice that I'd give is that if you're thinking of going down this path, self-care is so important. And I'm telling you right here, right now, that you will have professors who will like beat you over the head and tell you self-care is important, and you won't listen to them. But maybe you'll listen to me, because I've been there, done that, made that mistake. And so, yeah, that's the most important thing. If you're going to go into a profession like that, you have to always make sure that you're taking care of your own mental health, because the stories that you're going to hear, they're definitely going to start to take a toll. But it's going to be so rewarding, just being able to see a client who comes in just raw, just depressed or whatever it is, and being able to see the progress, that journey, and having that person come out on the other side and just become the best version of themselves and just be happy and fulfilled, that's amazing. And it's totally worth it. So yeah, in the beginning, of course, it's tough. It's tough for the client. It's tough for you. But yeah, you just have to think like, wow, but at the end of it, it's going to be amazing. If this person sticks with me and commits and does the work, then I'm going to be able to help this person feel so much better. And I'm going to feel better because I know that I help that person get to that point.
Right.
And so, yeah, it is super rewarding, but you have to be able to take care of yourself before you can take care of other people.
Right. Like the whole, make sure your cup is completely filled and that you're not half empty, because you can't pour from an empty cup if you're not full yourself.
Exactly. Yep. I love that saying.
Where can people continue to follow you on your journey, and where can they connect with you if they want to connect with you?
Yeah, sure. My website is www.globalcitizentherapy.com, and you can find me on all social media channels under the same handle, Global Citizen Therapy. And yeah, my podcast is also called the Global Citizen Therapy Podcast, to make it easy for people to find me and learn more. And yeah, I'd encourage you to check it out. First episode was about some of the things that we've been talking about here. It's about burnout. It's about self-care. It's about what to do when you're there, how to get through it, and how to come out on the other side and be productive. I interviewed a productivity and intentionality expert, and she talks about her own journey, which of course I could relate to, you could relate to, everyone could relate to, because burnout is so common. But at the same time, I don't think that it's taken as seriously as it needs to be. You know, people just kind of like, oh yeah, burnout. But really, it's super serious, because if you don't take care of yourself when you're feeling burnt out, then you'll spiral down into depression. You'll start, may even develop anxiety disorder. There's just so many things that if you don't take it seriously and stop when you're feeling burnt out, yeah, it could lead to health problems, just so many things.
Right. Yeah. And that's definitely good advice, especially during crazy times like this, especially for the pandemic, when everybody's feeling it. Everyone's feeling some type of burnout in one way, shape, or form. So I love that advice. I really appreciate that advice. So thank you.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah. Thank you for reaching out again. And I'm glad we had this conversation.
Yeah, me too. Well, take care.
Yep. Thank you. You have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
That's all the time that I have for today. Thank you so much for tuning in for today's show. I would love it if you would rate and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, if you would like to, and I would so appreciate it, if you left a review on Apple Podcasts, as this helps to boost the show's visibility, as well as letting me know how well the show is doing and just making sure that you guys are enjoying the show's content. Also, if you would like to, you can follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook, and you can find that at The Hipster Mom Podcast. I will be back very soon with a brand new episode. So until next time, keep living your best life. Peace.